Number one then, and number one now.
What's up, everybody? This is Farm Status episode 14 here. It is currently the 14th of April. Again, we're a couple days late, but trying to figure out some stuff on our end. I look forward to entertaining you guys for the next hour and some change here as we normally do. I am Josh, and I have my two normal guest hosts. Nice to have Chris back, and then Trevor, as always. How you guys doing tonight?
Doing fantastic.
Doing well. Good to be back.
All right, and if you guys hear anything in the show that you would like to hear, feel free to send us an email. Our email is farmstatuspodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voicemail or text us. Our number is 917-830-7438. All right, so we're going to dive right into some news. Actually, no, we're not. We're going to put that off a little bit. Chris, you've been gone, dude, but now that you've been back, finally get some more Rift time under your belt. What have you been doing in Rift? And then Trevor, you as well. What's up with you?
I've been getting on those new event currencies. Got to get some of those new essences, which look quite nice. And chomping at the bit, it looks like 1.8 might be right around the corner. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, I've basically been doing the same thing. Trying to farm up those ingots for the new event. And again, for the lesser essences. As well as still farming these inscribed so I can get some of the other lessers to finish out my fire resist core.
Good deal. I know I'm about 400 inscribed into the new sets now, but man, it just gets so tiring just watching the map like a hawk trying to find stupid invasions going on, you know?
Yeah. Audiobooks, man. Audiobooks.
When I'm waiting, I usually will run Chronicles or just find some other way to grind out PAs just to help pass the time.
Or just listen to the last 13 episodes of Farm Status, right?
Bazinga. On a loop. Yeah, on a loop.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. And Inscribed is like the only thing in this game that compares to EverQuest key farming. If anyone's ever done that, it's approaching the same amount of pain.
Right on. A couple of little personal service announcements here. We are partnered with rift.xam.com. More on them towards the end of the show. But if you're listening and you're looking for a terrific Rift fan site, make sure to head on over there, rift.xam.com. And you guys can now donate to Farm Status. Bandwidth is expensive, you know, and I'm not trying to ask for any handouts, but if you would like to donate $1, $2, 50 cents, 10 cents, whatever it is, we will gladly accept it and use it to make Farm Status bigger and better than ever. And if you donate $2 or more, we will let you have a blurb on the show so you can advertise for a guild, shout out to your friends, raiders, whatever you want, right? So donate $2 or more and get a free little take on the show. Sounds good. All right, so now into the news, guys. A couple big things and then some more discussion topics kind of revolving around some of the news. The first big piece, though, involves the queued quest reward system changing. Basically, cash and experience-only rewards will pay out automatically as soon as a quest is completed. However, the specifics at the end of, like, say, an expert dungeon run where you get to choose whether or not you want plaques of achievement, marks of ascension, greater marks of ascension, whatever it is, you can no longer keep saving those up and up and up and up and up until, I don't think anybody's actually came up with a finite number, but you can no longer do that. There is going to be a set number of end quest rewards that you can actually accumulate before they just start disappearing. Chris, Trevor, well, you know, what do you guys think about this change to the queued quest rewards?
I mean, I think it was sort of, you know, borderline exploitative because people are trying to save it up, right, to see if they can just smash home and get, like, you know, 90, infernal marks of ascension or something upon release. And there's just really no reason to save up for it. So I see no reason why someone should need to queue it up. Like, obviously there needs to be a minimum amount of queue just in case you, like, disconnect or something like that and come back. You still want to be able to get your quest reward, but there's no reason to have to save up 90 of these things.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you're doing that, then you're doing it for a reason, and I think that's probably why, because they're trying to cheat the system. It doesn't really affect me, because I always cleared mine right away, just because I'm greedy and I want my marks, so it's not a big deal. But for the people that were doing it, I mean, they had to know that they were doing, you know, something that was not intended.
Yeah, for sure. So if anybody out there listening has more than, I think Elrar said on the forums, any more than two or three, I would start massively and incredibly quickly clicking all those to make sure that you get them all before 1.8 drops. Otherwise, they might just disappear, and then you lose all that platinum, all that experience, and then all those marks if you were waiting and maybe trying to cheese the system a little bit.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I know a couple people, some of which run Justin TV or Twitch streams, and you can see at the top of their screen it has the little quest reward and a times 90 something on the end of it. Like, it'll be interesting to see what happens to them, whether or not they get the rewards just like automatically given to them, or they lose all of those, because if they lose all of them, they'll be pretty upset. But at the same time, you kind of got caught doing something that may be an exploit, so it's like, can you really complain about that? I don't know, it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you do actually lose them, and they have mentioned that if that happens, then you're just out of luck, because customer service will not be able to refund them for you.
Yeah, at least they're given advance warning, just sort of like, in 2 days we will anti-cheese this, so you better fix yourself.
Right on. The second of our three little news bits tonight, we have, and this is in reference to the 1.8 roundtable that Riff.Zam had with Adam Gershwitz and Scott Hartzman. Basically, they kind of pointed out what survival is going to be as far as tents and bedrolls. Basically, if you have a tent and bedroll, it will allow you to gain rested experience and not be attacked by open world mobs, right? So if you have to go AFK to go take care of your kids or to go take out the trash or whatever it is, you can hop into a tent and then be safe from the rest of the world. You can't stay in there for like as long as you would AFK in Meridian. They haven't actually said, you know, but that tents are going to disappear after 30 minutes or 45 minutes, but they're going to be a short-term solution to you having AFK in the open-world environment. Trevor, Chris, again, like, what do you guys think about this? You know, is this a good way if someone has to go AFK and their sole recall is down, that they can not be attacked while they're away and then have to, you know, soul walk and then pay and blah, blah, blah? Just kind of a nice quality of lifestyle change, right?
I foresee people starting, you know, tagging a couple of the invasion mobs during a zone event, and then just camping out and getting their rest of experience while they AFK, wait for the other people to finish the event so they can collect their inscribed. I'm not saying I'm going to do that, but I'm just saying the possibility is there.
Yeah, sure, you jump straight to the cheese, my friend.
I'm just saying, there's, you know, the possibility is there.
I mean, I don't know, I think it's kind of a cool little thing, but the thing I love most about tents and bedrolls is it is, like, the nerdiest thing possible. Like, it has an RP element to it, and then you can sort of, like, create your own little safe world where you jump in and nobody, you know, it could be a shut-in and nobody can harm you or anything like that. Like, it's just sort of this manifestation of how nerdy we are when we play this game, and it's just great. Even the way the Zam person asked the question, you know, about survival, can you tell us more about tents and bedrolls? And, like, I was actually excited to read the answer. Like, that's how nerdy I am. I was just like, oh my god, yes, I would love to know more about tents and bedrolls. It's pretty nice, though, because there are times when, like, it sounds really dumb, but, like, even after a raid, I just am right out in front of Hammernail, and I don't necessarily want to use my soul recall right away to go back, but at the same time, I don't want to lose out on any rest experience, so it'd be nice to just be out in front of Hammernail, throw down the tent, get rest experience, and be ready to zone people back in or something.
So the outside of Hammernail, and then here in a little bit, the outside of Infernal Dawn, it's going to look like a freaking ghetto in the 1930s Germany.
Oh,
right?
It's going to be
stacked up all over the place.
It's going to be Woodstock, straight up. It's just tents, Winnebagos. Hopefully I can customize mine with a sweet peace symbol.
Nice.
Be good.
Oh, man. All right, looking forward to that. The last bit of our news here tonight revolves around the cleric developer Zenbic coming out with some pretty substantial news as far as block caps and just the general changes for cleric tanks. Basically, for the actual block reduction, the soft cap is now 60 and the hard cap is now 70%. And then the actual amount, I'm not going to get into any detailed equations here, but the amount between, like, the actual block amount for the soft cap and the actual block amount for the hard cap are substantially different, which basically equals out to, for cleric tanks, block and parry points becoming much less valuable as you get more and more of them over the soft cap. Chris, you as a cleric tank, I know, you know, what's your kind of feedback on this change posted by Zenbeck a couple days ago?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty significant because this block bug that's been around for a long time is really one of the reasons that warrior tanks have been so strong. So just to give some people background on the situation, we've all had a working similar amount percentage block chance hard and soft caps, and those have always been working. However, when you mouse over the tooltip for block, you'll see not only is there a chance to block, but then a damage reduction from block stat. So in other words, how much damage is reduced when you do actually block. And that used to have stated soft and hard caps, but they actually never worked, which meant stacking block was very effective, because even though I didn't get a higher chance to block than I should be, the amount blocked every time that I did was going up without any ceiling. And that's why, you know, warriors are doing things like taking 20k hits and blocking 17k of it. And that's, you know, been a bug for a while, and they sort of stated that it'd be difficult to change, and they didn't want to do anything about it. But come 1.8, with the new gear and the way, you know, they're taking a lot of block off of armor and all this kind of stuff, as that's happening, they've decided they want to all of a sudden fix this bug. And so that presents a pretty big gear, you know, sort of conundrum for a lot of people, because now all of a sudden, you know, parry and dodge have suddenly become important for mitigation tanks like clerics and warriors. So it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out. The block damage reduction, the diminishing returns above soft cap, as Zibnik posted, are actually pretty steep. So, you know, your soft cap is now around 1081, and stacking much higher than that will still be useful, but how much higher, I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out.
Yeah, then this kind of creates a bit of a conundrum moving forward, as, I mean, especially maybe not in Infernal Dawn, but say two raid tiers down the road. If there isn't any kind of level cap adjustment, you know, you're going to see certain stats for warriors and then clerics and then eventually rogues and whatever else just become is almost worthless, because you're already at the soft cap and you're at the point where diminishing returns isn't going to net you anything. And so you are having to start itemizing differently, and we already see it now, you know, but does this concern you at all moving forward into the future of itemization in Rift?
Well, I mean, I think one of the worst parts about it is that they're moving a lot of the mitigation gearing that you would do on any of the three tank classes to passive mitigation. So it used to be that I can itemize for block, and I can stack strength and stack block at the expense of endurance, and that would be very effective. But with this change, that is no longer very effective, and they've shifted a lot of my warrior mitigation to just talents, right? So my root tree talents and warrior, just specking three warrior tank souls gives me a majority of my mitigation. And they've also stated, along with this block bug, that they have no intention of nerfing warrior tanks, but they are instead going to bring up passive mitigation for rogues and clerics to that same level. So great for rogues and clerics, but at the same time, everything's moving to a passive sense, to where our gearing choices are sort of flubbed, like you said. So, you know, if you look at it from a warrior standpoint, it's great. I can stack strength, because strength is all over warrior items, and that's good for block, and it gives me some parry, and dodge wasn't ever really important for me, so there's no reason to worry about dex. Well, for clerics, it's not really that way, right? So wisdom gives you both parry and block, but those aren't very good for you. Dodge is actually becoming very important for you, so now you have to spec or gear into int and all these kinds of things, and, you know, your gearing coming up in ID and beyond is going to be primarily in a stat that is not meant for your class. So clerics and warriors are going to be stacking avoidance, which is dex and int for us, which is not a primary stat for our class, so I see that as a problem.
Yeah, and then you get into, like you just mentioned, and I know we were talking about this pre-show a little bit, as far as people who really enjoy tanking, and they might be like a main spec tank, whether it's warriors or clerics, and I'm just going to use this clerics as a kind of, for instance, you know, having to then spec planar attunement points into intelligence just to get better dodge, but then that's going to significantly hurt any kind of DPS Ikar spec you might have, because then you're losing out on wisdom, which turns into spell power, or just the straight spell power hexes. You know, so it's really, really going to maybe cause a bit of a divide maybe between people who are very, very serious about tanking and then what they can do when they're not tanking, you know?
Well, I mean, easy solution there. Just get PA capped.
Oh, yeah. Just sign me up for, bam, you know, 1,200 yeah. PAs.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see how it's going to affect rogues as well. So I don't know what form the passive mitigation buffs are coming for clerics and rogues in the final form, but presumably we'll be going, you know, live with 1.8, and it'll be good for, you know, to have a homogenization amongst passive mitigation for the three tank classes. But the thing that's great about rogues right now, right, is that, you know, okay, dodge cap is actually, it's pretty easy to get to for rogues, but the situation is, you know, dex affects dodge and deflect. So your mitigation stat and your primary avoidance stat are the same. That's great for gearing, but now that, you know, you're going to have to start picking up parry a little bit more, you know, rogues might have to itemize in strength or rune or do source machines in strength, which is not very helpful to them because it's not their primary stat. So I don't really know how that's all going to shake out in the long term, but I think, again, it'd be a different story if there was no parry cap, because right now, you know, stacking parry as opposed to dodge is very inefficient considering how much more per stat, you know, how much more dodge per stat you get than parry. Parry is a really horrible thing to have to itemize because the gains are so small per stat point. It's just sort of, you know, leading down the same road that they've had before, that, you know, PTS is just not good for testing tank changes and tank itemization just because, you know, there's so few tanks and it's hard to really test a tank. I'm sure they log on and, you know, find a tank and have them, you know, get punched by something and measure the output and stuff, but it's very difficult for them to test tank changes without inviting a whole guild onto PTS to run a hammer nail, which, you know, I'm sure everyone is super excited about doing.
All right, and then kind of rolling with this same kind of small tank chat here, Alien, who's basically the rogue developer, he, a couple days ago, posted something involving some updates. I don't know if they're buffs or nerfs. I'm going to leave that to Trevor, but some updates to Riftstalkers in general. Trevor's been kind of poring over those just recently. There was no actual, like, specifics. There was no numbers thrown out, no details given. But Trevor, just from looking over those, I think there were 6 bullets that Alien gave. You know, what do you think about these potential 1.8 rogue changes that are kind of being put in at the last moment here?
They seem pretty good. I think they're definitely stepping in the right direction. The one thing, I'll just start off by reading out what the 6 bullet points are. The first one is they plan to give rogue tanks less avoidance, higher deflect chance, better mitigation from a successful deflect, slightly worse mitigation from an unsuccessful deflect, and better overall damage mitigation, which those two, to me, the last two just seem to counteract each other, but, you know, whatever. And then the last one is just overall more health, which I definitely am looking forward to. But as you can see, it seems like they're sort of homogenizing the tanks, where the rogues now will be more reliant on mitigation and deflects, i.e. blocks, just like the clerics and the warriors, which I can see why they're doing that, but at the same time, it does kind of suck, like, from a sort of style difference between playing a rogue versus a warrior. Because, you know, right now we're primarily avoidance tanks, which is why they're reducing our avoidance. But I can see, like, sort of in-game why they would be concerned about that. Because, I mean, you have an avoidance tank where you have to sort of fine-tune a boss with an avoidance tank in mind. Because if you're a rogue and you say you avoid 3 attacks, and then the boss is going to have to hit really hard for warriors and clerics because they're going to be blocking most of it. But if that rogue takes, say, 3 hits that aren't, you know, avoided, that's probably going to 3-shot your rogue because they don't have that, you know, if they don't deflect or whatever, they're not going to have that mitigation because that's not their primary, you know, defense mechanic. So I can see why they would want to sort of homogenize the tanks in that respect, but it does sort of, like I said, it does sort of put a damper on the fact that all the tanks were so different. At least rogues, you know, were so different from the whole mitigation and blocking thing. But is it, if it brings rogues into a more serious in-game role so that we get to see more actual Riftstalkers tanking progression content, I'm all for it. I'm definitely looking forward to that. And then the other thing that they changed was, of course, False Blade. I've already gone over that a million times. But the Shadow Guard is now going to give us more physical damage mitigation. I think it goes from 5 to 15% when you put all the points in it. And then they're changing the Zardonus Riftstalker Crystal. The 2-point bonus, or the two-piece bonus, is now giving us a 5% health bonus. Instead of the, I think right now it's currently a 15% damage reduction or damage mitigation whenever you deflect a non-physical hit. So basically like a Sicheron breath, you take 15% less damage when you deflect. So I think the change there is definitely going to help us because we do need more health. So I'm looking forward to these changes.
Well, I mean, what you pointed out there, too, is perfect. It gives you a hint of what it's going to be like in ID, because I agree, that is the biggest problem with an avoidance tank, is you're going to get one shot kind of a lot if you're not well-geared, and if so, particularly in progression. So, you know, it's just like in early sort of Sicheron-type days and stuff like that, it was just very difficult to run a rogue because you couldn't avoid the breath. It was an unavoidable attack, and so before you had, you know, deflects and things like that, it was just all, you know, literally, or I guess I wouldn't say literally, but practically impossible to run a rogue as a progression tank there, just because the healing requirement was so high. And that's something I think Tryon is trying to address. So, you know, they say they want any type of tank to be able to tank any encounter, and I think if they keep the individuality of both clerics, or of all clerics, warriors, and rogues, then, you know, the healing becomes very different. So it in progression with a primary avoidance tank, it becomes very sort of a different healing assignment you have to have on them in progression content versus maybe a warrior who has more constant damage reduction but doesn't avoid so much. So, you know, I think they're trying to make it not only homogeneous on the damage reduction side, but sort of homogeneous on the healing side, so you don't really notice the difference between which tank, you know, is tanking the current encounter, which is, you know, like you said, Trevor, both good and bad. You know, if it makes you more competitive on progression, great, but at the same time, if it's removing some of the uniqueness, that might hurt a little bit. But I wonder how much of that you'll notice on your side, like doing your rotation and blinking around. Are you really going to notice the difference in being more mitigation than you were before?
I think so, like, because, I mean, it's probably just, like I said, it's a personal thing, because I happen to like watching all the dodges and parries that are going up the right side of my screen. I don't know that all tank spirits actually pay attention to that, but, you know, it's nice just to know that that's actually happening, and you're not just, you know, taking a boatload of damage because you're not blocking or you're not deflecting.
Yeah, I will miss all of the block sounds on my warrior, which will keep me from shouting block, 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 block on mumble at all times. But, you know, it's a loss I'm willing to take.
All right, so we're going to see how all that ends up shaking out here in the very, very near future. All that was not in the show notes, right? So here we go, a little bit more off the beaten path or off the beaten show notes here. When do you guys think 1.8 will drop? So, right, today is the 14th. Next Wednesday is the 18th. Do you think it's going to be live on the 18th of April?
I think so. I think, didn't they already say something about on their Twitter feed that it was going to be released next week?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think they're going to wait until the Thursday either. So, you know, as of now, they've shifted the event start dates off of Wednesday, because everybody would log on Wednesday to go raid, and then we'd all hit Sicheron and have 400, 500 pings, because, you know, everybody and their brother is out doing all the new quests for the new event for that week. But I think it's going to be just straight up Wednesday, open and ready to go.
No, dude, no. They're going to be all outside camping. See?
Yeah, that's I forgot. There's going to be a seance, and there's going to be some drum circles.
Yeah, there's going to be a barbecue.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, that's for sure. All right, so we want to hear what you guys have to think, as always. So make sure to send us an email, farmstatuspodcast@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail or text us. Our number is 917-830-RIFT, 917-830-7438. It's time for our discussion topics. These are going to come directly from that same round table we had mentioned earlier at rift.zam.com. Our partner, actually. See? Notice how I just was fluid in that
transition. It was seamless.
It was, yeah, yeah.
Seamless. Yeah, I was actually surprised here.
All right. Basically, we're going to be looking at two quotes, and these have been blown up by the Rift community, whether on the forums or in-game. Actually, I was in-game earlier today, and Level 50 chat was actually talking about the same things we are. So we're going to address it for all you beautiful farm status listeners out there. By the way, we still haven't got a term, either coined by a listener or one of us, for someone that listens to farm status. We still need one of those.
Yeah, let the suggestions roll in.
Nothing.
Oh, come on, Trevor. So you came up with the name for farm status and raid lock, but you don't have anything to call all of our listeners out there?
I really don't. I've honestly been thinking about this for a while, and I got nothing.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, raid lock, that probably completely tapped his creative juices at this point. It's just a barren desert out there. He's got to refuel.
It's true. I did go through a lot of names with that one before we ended up getting raid lock.
It's true. All right, anyway, so these two quotes here. The first one, and this is taken directly from, I don't know who it is, and this, I'm being a horrible, horrible host here. I don't know if it was Adam Gershowitz or Scott Harsman, but one of those two fine gentlemen says, and I quote, "We don't want to create situations where the entire success or failure of the raid can be messed up by one person getting a lag blip or one person missing a single queue," unquote. So guys, it seems like most of the, like for instance, the Sicheron idle mechanics or the Oracle Alira debuff mechanics, seems like most of those are going to just disappear from the game, right? Focusing a lot more on teamwork rather than individual responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, that the statement that he made is pretty general and can be interpreted in many ways. But I think if you look at it from a designer standpoint, and I'll use the Sicheron fight as an example of this, since we all know that is an insta-wipe, a multiple insta-wipe mechanic that you could drop on the raid. The problem with Sicheron is that the different mechanics that Sicheron have are so separate from each other, and they don't really interact with each other in a way that doesn't make you feel like you're working as a team. So the breath mechanic is just completely separate from everything else in the fight. The only thing you have to have is the boss not pointed at the raid. And, you know, this doesn't interact very, very much with the other types of mechanics. Like, you know, someone taking the breath or someone healing the breath doesn't really care what's happening with the totem. They just don't. And so the problem there is that you have sort of two types of encounters going on at the same time, one of which can completely wipe the raid. And the second of which, I guess if you die to breath, you can also wipe the raid. But the insta-wipe mechanic is just the only thing that's punishing about that is, you know, did you do XYZ? It's not, were you able to cope with it as a raid? You know, do you have any good players that can make up for the lackings of other players? There's no team aspect there. If I walk into the raid, we're all going to die. And it just doesn't matter how good anyone in the raid is doing or how well we are doing at that point. We're just all dead. So that type of intense punishment just doesn't allow you to be creative or express any level of skill. So I think that's what they're trying to avoid. Things that don't, you know, things that punish you so hard that your skill cannot get you out of it. I think that they're trying to avoid that.
Yeah, I can, I agree with what they're doing here. I mean, it, on the one hand, like, you know, there's the sort of hard mode. Like, if you mess up on one thing, it wipes your raid, too bad. But, maybe they can sort of, work that into an actual hard mode. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. Because the way it works now, like, yeah, if someone lags, you know, it's not their fault. You know, and that's something that is completely beyond your control. You know, it's, and that just, it sucks when that happens, especially, you know, if you're, the boss is, say, like 5% and someone lags out and they can't place the totem on Sicheron and you wipe. Or, you know, or they don't, they miss a purge and you wipe. Like, to something that has absolutely nothing to do with anyone's player skill at all. And that's just, that's not, something that's conductive to good raid design and to the mental stability of your raiders. But yeah, I think it should be something that may not necessarily wipe your raid, but definitely have a very negative impact where you can recover from it.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the point, is the recovery part, right? And one example to go to that is the 10-man raid. So I think really people really underestimate the brilliance in design of 10-man raids. The 10-mans in this game are kind of amazing. And they can be just as difficult as everything else. In other words, pre-nerf Anrak, like, oh my god.
Sogan, maybe?
Exactly. I mean, people would consider General Silgan probably the hardest boss in the game right now due to the nerfs in Achilleos. And that one has a very punishing mechanic. So Heat Wave, while it won't one-shot you, or not Heat Wave, excuse me, Heat Funnel, while it won't one-shot you, in combination with other mechanics or an inability to run perpendicular to a bubble, will kill you. And that is bad for the 10-man. However, if your other DPSers in the rest of your raid, you know, maybe your healer's good enough that you can solo heal if one healer dies, something like that, if they're good enough, they can recover and keep going. And that's the kind of mechanic that you want. So one person dying causes significant raid stress, but not absolute raid stress. And so that's the thing that just sort of gets me about Sicheron, like you mentioned with the purge. You know, this cleric, you know, could be doing... You know, there could be a cleric who's looking to purge, as most people have clerics doing the purge. You know, could be doing 4,400 DPS while purging on Sicheron. So they're a great player. But they just lag or don't hit the right button, and it's just one button. It's not a whole DPS rotation. It's not a gearing issue. It's not any sort of, you know, attentiveness issue. They just missed one button, and everyone dies. So there's just... There's no reason for you to change your strat. There's no reason for you to make any sort of adjustment to make it easier. You just go again, and this time they don't miss hitting the button. So it's just not clever raid design.
Yeah,
it's just maddening. Do it again. Exactly. Just do it again, and this time hit this one button instead of all these other. And it's just sort of, you know, it just feels so disconnected. You know, Sicheron to me is just a parse boss, and the mechanics feel so disconnected from everything else, and I think they want to avoid that in the future.
Do you guys think we'll see more... kind of in encounter or mechanics a lot like the pre-nerf Achilleos wave, where as a player, if you're not paying attention and you get hit by a wave, you get knocked off the whole platform or die or just whatever it is in the future. You know, do you guys think we'll see more of those, which really rewards the individual paying attention and, you know, a lot of individual responsibility? And then, you know, if you have 19 people that are all responsible for themselves not getting hit by waves, then you end up beating the hardest boss in the game. You know, do you think we'll see more of those where if four or five people seriously derp and get hit by a wave or whatever the future mechanic is, then that's a pretty serious hit to the rest of the raid force. You know, do you guys think we'll see more like that, more individually responsible mechanics that have a huge, huge impact on the end of the fight?
I mean, I think those would be good because, again, you know, Achilleos pre-nerf waves was a great way to have a challenging mechanic that, if failed, put significant stress in your raid, but it was recoverable. You know, especially nowadays, you know, you could kill Achilleos with two people wave derping in P1 or something. And, you know, you can keep pushing if the rest of your players are good enough. And it's sort of, I think, the correct level of difficult. You know, you could think of lots of alternative things, though, right? Think of Thalgar in GP. If someone messes up on the leash, then everyone gets a healing debuff. And while that puts significant stress on just a part of the raid, the healers, you know, it doesn't completely wipe you. And if you're good enough, you can push through it. And that's what they really need. They need something that puts an extreme stress on the raid when it's failed, either by one person or multiple people, but doesn't result in an insta-wipe.
Yeah, and that also, of course, has the added bonus if you're really on top of things and, you know, people are really... stepping up their game, then they get rewarded, you know, because no one screws up and the raid goes flawlessly and it even goes faster. You have higher DPS, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. That's the perfect way to say, you know, especially for avoidable mechanics like waves, right? So the best way to, you know, eliminate that wave stress for you is just don't get hit by it. And that's a great thing. It's the same thing with breath. You know, breath used to maybe one-shot people more than it does now, but you know, breath is a great kind of stressor that you can get out of. If you don't want to worry about, you know, stacking lots of healers, just make sure everyone in your raid can avoid breath. And if they can, you have reduced the amount of healing you have to do in Achilleos by a very large amount. So I think that's, you know, avoidable damage mechanics and all this stuff are very good.
And of course, another incentive to get people to avoid things like that is just make an achievement.
For sure. Oh, yeah. And, like, achievement with sparkly rewards? Oh, it's just guaranteed everyone's going to do it first time.
I mean, you just don't want to do a waterproof achievement pre-nerf just for those 10 achievement points?
10 achievement points. Big, big deal.
All right. So that's our first quote that we're taking here from riff.zam.com. Our partner, Bam, did it again. I'm awesome. The second quote
so
we're doing here... the second quote we're doing here, it's... I'm just going to read it. It says, quote, Over the next couple of weeks, you're going to hear about how we're going to stage out some of the encounters so you don't end up with people feeling like they are forced to bust their heads against stuff. End quote. This, long story short, basically means they're going to be gating content. Haranel was artificially gated through very, very hard and, in some cases, impossible boss mechanics or timers or whatever it was. But you could theoretically get to all 11 bosses in one night at the very start. But here in ID, we're going to have basically gated encounters, which means, you know, for the first, however they have it, for the first 2 weeks, you can only kill 4 of the 8 bosses or whatever it is. You know, Chris, Trevor, what do you guys think about this, about gating boss fights in Infernal Dawn?
I think it's interesting. It's new for them, I guess. I mean, like you said, Hammernail was to a point, but not, like, so direct, you know, about it, you know? But, I think it's a good thing for people that aren't maybe, you know, the bleeding edge progression guilds, but then the people that are, I don't know how much they're actually gonna like it, you know, because you can't, like, there's always a race, you know, to who gets to kill the boss first. And then who are, say, X, you know, I'm not gonna give names, just say X guild kills the first boss, you know, in a week. And well, that gives however long, you know, Trion waits to open up the next boss, everyone else to catch up. So that the, you know, the first guild to kill this boss can't get all this extra time on the next boss and just, you know, make that gap a little bit wider. And I think that's probably gonna, annoy some people. But it's, I don't know, I don't want to comment yet. Like, I think it's, like I said, it's interesting, but I don't know how successful it's gonna be in terms of making their raiders happy.
Well, I mean, I think really the only raiders that are going to be super upset by this are 7-day-a-weekers. I mean, that's who this really is a disadvantage for, right? So the main advantage going 7 days a week, super hardcore on this, is that you are just putting in more time than everybody else. And so over the course of a few weeks and a month, you will gain a significant advantage over your next super competitive top-tier guild because you're just raiding that extra day or those extra 2 days or whatever that the other guild isn't. Whereas with gated content, you can do that, and you might, you know, get some world firsts over the, you know, your most competitive guild that's next to you, but you're gonna run into, you know, that gate, and you're gonna have to stop, and it doesn't matter then if you're raiding 7 days a week, because everyone else is gonna catch up to you. Which is pretty healthy, because it turns ID from one progression race into sort of a multi-stage progression race. Whereas in Hammernail, since it was open to everyone, and really, or you could go, like Josh said, almost all the way to the end right at the beginning, and, you know, it had this weird artificial gating in the middle in Rune King, who was, you know, the hardest boss in Hammernail. You know, the guilds that got Rune King down first had a significant advantage on top 4 bosses. And so the competition is sort of over at that point. And then once everybody got to Achilleos and was stuck for months and months, the competition sort of got reignited on to see who could kill Achilleos. So that type of gating really makes the progression race sort of more exciting, because every boss, or, you know, every other boss can be a new world first that multiple people have a chance at. You know, a lot of people forget that. You know, I mean, back in Hammernail days, Maximation was crushing early on, with the eventual sort of, you know, king of Hammernail Voodoo that came later, and Voodoo ended up sort of passing them about halfway through the instance. But then Maximation was sort of rebuilding itself, and then Achilleos became the new race for them. So all what happened on the previous bosses, them flip-flopping places, sort of got forgotten, and then it was this big race for Achilleos. And so I think that will be something that happens in ID, where we see, you know, competitions on multiple bosses rather than just maybe one or two.
The biggest reason why I like this kind of gating content is kind of like you had something you had mentioned before, Chris, is that it rewards the raiders and the guilds, and specifically like the raid leaders, who have successful wipes, which basically means you've wiped a mechanic, but you learn from it. And then, so, you know, your first attempt, you get the boss down to 95%. Your second attempt, you get him down to 87%, and then 72, and then 65, or whatever it is, all the way down to 0. It definitely rewards smart players and smart time management, rather than just going in there, like you said, 7 days a week for 5 hours a day, and just batter it down. You know, it's like it just rewards successful wipes rather than just world firsts through just the whole slash play thing, personally.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you know, WoW had a huge problem with that around Burning Crusade, where the top guilds were people who just raided 24 hours. So they ran 3 raiding crews, and they would just rotate 8-hour shifts, and those guilds just got to the end first because there were a bunch of tank and spake type of counters at the time in which the only thing that you benefited from was just playing more than the next guild. And this gated content thing rewards intelligent players, because if you can figure out a mechanic or a way of doing something that's more consistent than someone else, then you will get the kill first. And that type of, you know, thought being rewarded, I think, is good, you know. And we've already heard from the developers that, you know, we're not really going to have tank and spake kind of things. They want to have, you know, we've seen videos of pirate ships and huge amounts of ads and all of these things in which, you know, tank and spake does not really seem to, you know, describe the encounter from what we've seen in these videos. And so in that case, you know, hopefully we'll be seeing, you know, intelligent play rewarded. And I think gating is something that will, you know, appease to those sort of, I guess, what you, like you mentioned, Josh, efficient guilds. Plus, you know, people really need to just farm things for that 2 weeks in the gated content. You know, it's a nice comforting feeling to put in a good solid week of hard raids, get a section of a dungeon down, and then farm it a few times, and then be ready for that same hard thing again when a new gate opens up, rather than just feel like you have to push for weeks and weeks and weeks. I think that's, you know, this is their response to Akilios just breaking guilds. You know, I think this is what they're trying to remedy that with.
All right, so then let me ask you guys this. How long do you think it is until ID is fully cleared by the very first guild, whether it be a Voodoo, a Maximation, a Special Olympics, an Addiction, whatever it is, Trinity, you know, the whole list goes on for the whole top 10 world guilds. How long do you think? I know that in Hammernel, it opened July 27th with the world of, with the Waves of Madness event, and then Voodoo cleared it 28th September, so just over 2 months later, 2 months and a day. How long do you guys think it's going to be between the first boss dying and the last boss dying?
I'm going to say 4 months.
I mean, it depends on the way the gating is, because, you know, gating can artificially extend the life of the dungeon. Like I said, you know, let's say you spend a week on progression, get all the bosses down, and then you farm for a week, and then they open the next gate. Well, that farm week wasn't really progression time, right? You were already killing the bosses. But I would definitely say up to end wing bosses, depending on how they gate it. Non-end wing bosses will all be dead within a week of when they were opened. And then end wing bosses might take 2 weeks. So I would say of actual progression time, maybe a month and a half to 2 months. I think they're aiming to have it be about the same amount of time. So I wouldn't be surprised if the entire place was cleared, not counting gating time, in 2 months. So if they interject an extra gating week in there and do it in sort of three stages, then yeah, it could be pushed out to Trevor's close to 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, and counting the wait time between the gating.
Yeah, I mean, I think, so again, you gotta remember back to Hammernel, right? So Sicheron was tough because it was just a ridiculous DPS check. Akilios was theoretically impossible in the beginning. You know, Grug was very difficult. Rune King also. So I think you're not going to have the Sicheron one-shot type difficulties that you're having now, in which guilds just imploded themselves because one guy keeps running contracts into each other or something. You won't have those kinds of things going on, but, you know, you'll have a lot more, like you were talking about, Josh, satisfying wipes, I think, to where, you know, things are going well, it just started to kind of fall apart at the end and you couldn't keep up and then you die, but it was satisfying because you pushed further than you did the pull before. So I think you'll see guilds be more encouraged in raid times, you know, people be okay with raiding for a little extra amount of time. So, you know, and I think people, you know, the top guilds that survived Hammernel intact and still have most of their core players, they're going to be really well set up to just kind of smash through ID.
And I know you said it before and I'm going to say it now, and this kind of has just a little bit of like bearing on the current topic, but I guess it has a bit more than I initially thought. Anyway, Herbert, on my part, how big of an impact do you think PA is actually going to fully play out? You know, guilds that have 15 raiders with 600 or more PAs, do you think that they're going to actually fare that much better when it comes to actual progression through Infernal Dawn?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
I like Trevor's response. Amped it up there with an "oh yeah." Yeah, I mean, the thing people forget is, you know, you see on the forums quite a bit people posting like, "Oh well, you know, if I got all my PAs, I'd only have, you know, 180 extra spell power and this and that. And, you know, yeah, as an individual, it's not a huge bump, but you gotta look at it, like you said, all 20 people. So all 20 people with tier 1 and 2 endurance PAs, maybe not having to drop a hit point banner and instead dropping a DPS banner, that stuff makes a big difference. And so if your entire raid is prepped like that, then I think you're going to have a significant advantage. Now, what I would say is between the top 10 guilds, probably not that much, because I'm willing to bet that the top 10 guilds are probably, as a guild, within 10% of each other on PAs, period. So it's really not that big of a difference between them, but the separation between the top guilds and everyone else following them, I think, will be quite large. So, you know, ID may end up being sort of like, you know, the middle of the table people's dungeon, right? So that it's not just for the super hardcores. It's for super hardcore plus the people just below them, you know, a really good progression challenge for them. Not to say that I think it's going to be super easy, but I think, you know, it just won't be as punishing as Hammernail, and I think PAs will, you know, sort of play a significant part of making it easier for the top guilds for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, going back to what Tryon had first said about PAs, like, they didn't want them to be, you know, a sort of a make-or-break thing. But they might be small increments per player, but like you said, if you multiply that by 20, it's really going to add up a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just, it's really the big difference between, you know, you have a guild that is, you know, I know there are guilds right now that are farming Hammernail. They play it pretty safe as they go through it, and they can clear the dungeon in just over 2 hours, when 2 hours is like the new, you know, rapid assault time. So you have guilds that are doing that, but, you know, they get to Sikron, they're maybe doing 56, 57k, which is good DPS, but, you know, you have the top guilds that are ready to go into ID, and they're over 70,000 DPS. And that's just a huge gap, and a good portion of it is due to the amount of PAs that these top guilds have. And so when you go into ID, you know, the difference between 56 and 70k DPS is a big deal. Especially when it comes to progression and rage timers. So I think, you know, it will end up making a big difference, and I think Tryon has tuned it not to the level the top guilds have, but to a more manageable level. So we'll see how nice it is and whether or not they get a payoff for that.
All right, so then with that being said, let's take a step back, actually, for a, you know, let's take an 11 of 11 guild who maybe cleared it post-nerf, right? So post 1.7.8.9, whatever hotfix was, that really, really kind of did it in for Akilios. How long do you think that those guilds are going to actually take before they fully clear ID and they actually down Lathys and Maleforge and everything? 6 months? 7 months? Maybe a little bit sooner?
I would say, including the gating, at least 6 months. Closer to 8.
Yeah. I don't know, that's a good question, because, you know, remember that farm time that the top guilds have is progression time for everyone else, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it was for the end wing bosses. I mean, it might take them 3 weeks of straight progression time to kill an end wing boss, but I think the bosses leading up to the end wings, I bet you they could have one of those dead in a week or two, even on their more casual raid schedule of 3 or 4 nights a week. I think it's completely possible to have those dead. So I think, you know, the first few gates you'll see all the guilds kind of keeping pace with each other, but then as the harder bosses open up, I think you'll see the gradient of a guild spread out. So yeah, I'd say 6 months, which is, you know, not too bad considering it was 4 months with the gating for top guilds. You know, an extra 2 months for a more casual guild seems reasonable.
Yeah, just to clarify, that's that gradient you were talking about, the official term for that is called the meh scale.
That's true, yes. I forgot to mention that. It is the meh scale from elitist to, you know, complete casual, of course.
Exactly.
Excuse me. I apologize to the elitist raiders that are now going to send me meh emails.
There you go, Trevor. You need to get, like, a webpage and this, you know, www.don'tbemeh.com.
Someone's going to do a remix of me on that, like, dubstep it up.
Oh, dear God. Please, no. If you're listening out there, no.
I support this, by the way.
All right, fellas, that's episode 14. Actually, pretty short this week. anything else to say?
It's just the anticipation for ID shortness. Like, we just want to. I know Trevor wants to log off and just get back to farming those inscribes.
I just can't wait. I'm so excited. I'm about to burst.
Yeah, your finger is just poised on that login button.
Yeah, something like that.
All right, so kind of artificially extending this episode. what's the very first thing you guys are going to do Wednesday, theoretically Wednesday, when the servers actually come up? What's you know, you're itching, you hit play, you're actually logged in. What's the very first thing you guys are going to be doing?
I'm going to run into the sanctum and set up a tent.
Oh, no, I'm going to get my elitism hardcore on. I'm going to log in and just, boom, get my fire and earth cores ready to go and start running around on the volcano looking for the entrance to ID. Like a crazy person.
Oh, so none of you guys are going to go fishing. None of you guys are going to check out any of the new seals, the new survival. Not going to go, you know, start your own Woodstock 2012.
Well, like I said, I'm going to have a tent in the sanctum, so, you know, I can do whatever I want in there and they can't touch me.
Well, I mean, I would, you know, sort of go fishing, but I'm just not sure what fishing poles do. Oh, wait, yeah, there's this useful question on Rift Samurai. I got it right here. Could you explain what fishing poles will do? And a developer has answered that question for me.
Such an enigma.
There you go. Yeah, my favorite part is that that's not a one-line response. Like, the question is, could you explain what fishing poles will do? And the answer is, like, a paragraph long. So this must be some complicated... It's got to be, like, fly fishing, like 10-2. 10-2, you know, you got to... It's probably pretty involved.
Well, you know, I'm sure there have been people theory crafting it up out there to get the best, you know, best place to fish, the best kind of fishing pole, you know, the timing that you want to click the button, you know, to fish.
Oh, yeah, and I'm sure there's, you know, PAs for different types of lures.
Forget the race to finish Lathys and Maleforge. It's the race to whoever gets 300 fishing first.
Oh, yeah, it's just bass fishing is a huge sport, man. I say we have achievements for who catches the heaviest bass.
Yes. All right, so that is episode 14. Yeah, we're at 14 now. So, yeah, Chris, you're back. Welcome back. You'll be here. Trevor's been here hanging out with me. Make sure you guys, everybody out there listening, to check out Raidlock. It's not going to be up this week, but next week. So it's going to give all of our guests like a week to get in there and to experience it, so that they can come to Raidlock and to just kind of share with everybody out there listening, you know, everything that is going on in Infernal Dawn, not only personally but along with their guild and everything. So check that out in probably around the 27th or 28th of April. I'm going out on a limb and saying that weekend, the last weekend in April, is probably where the first episode of Raidlock is going to be. But I'm looking forward to it, and I know Chris and Trevor, you guys are too.
Absolutely.
Always. I just asking people. I'm just going to basically spend the entire time trying to squeeze strats out of people.
All right, guys. That's episode 14. I've said that like 18 times now. Anyway, you can definitely head on over to rift.zam.com. They have the most up-to-date planar attunement calculator, soul tree calculator, and the largest Rift database, including loot drops, quest help, and everything else you need to be your best in our favorite game, Rift. And if you've got something you'd like to share about the show, feel free to email us at farmstatuspodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear all of your feedback, whether it's good, bad, hate mail, love mail, whatever it is. You can drop us a voicemail or text us. Our number is 917-830-RIFT, 917-830-7438. Follow us on Twitter. As always, you can find us at Farm Status Rift. And our show is on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher is the smarter way to listen to radio. And as always, guys, remember to be excellent to each other. Later.